Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. My name's David Reed, and this is Merrick Larwood.
Hello there. You sound older, David.
I am older. I've had a birthday since our last episode.
Many happy returns.
Thank you.
Do you feel older at all?
No, not really. No. No, it's an early 30s. It doesn't really have any significance, does it? I'm just counting down towards 40 now.
It's my birthday very soon as well. I'm in my late 30s. It has more significance.
So you're the Danny Glover of our double act.
Well, Danny Glover was about 60, right?
That's right, yeah. He was closer to retirement.
Well, old age certainly hasn't bought you many manners, David. David Reed. Anyway, we're not here to talk about age.
Films. Yeah.
We're here to talk about films, as usual.
Now, you went to see one of the bigger releases out at the moment.
Yes, I went to see one of the summer blockbusters. It sounds like a really patronising start, isn't it? Why am I talking in a patronising way?
I don't know. You feeling particularly superior today?
Inferior, if anything. That's what happens, though. People who feel inferior tend to patronise other people. It's a way of disguising it. That's just what I think. I went to see Godzilla.
Godzilla. He's just showing his back on the poster. He's being very aloof in this one, isn't he?
He's a bit like that. I went to see this on the day after it was released, so about 10 days ago or something, quite a while ago.
Yeah.
And I was the only person in the cinema in a 400-seater. The only person.
Is it not doing that well?
I can't imagine it. It was an afternoon showing, but you think on the second day there'd be at least one person.
Yeah.
But it was the summer weather syndrome,
I suppose, yeah. I mean, it's got Bryan Cranston in the lead role, right? He's popular.
Bryan Cranston's got
Godzilla. He's not been in anything for a while, but he is popular.
Right, well, let me tell you about this film. So, Bryan Cranston's in it. And is it Juliette Binoche? I should know this French one. This tapping's just me looking up in the background.
The interesting thing that people have been talking about is the director of this.
Well, I've got loads to say about it. Yeah,
go ahead. Why don't you tell us the plot first?
Okay, so the plot is Bryan Cranston and his wife Juliette Binoche.
Yeah.
In Japan. The whole first 20 minutes, I couldn't really concentrate. Because I think Bryan Cranston was filming this during the same time as Breaking Bad or something. Because he had a wig. It was a really terrible wig. But his hair was exactly the same hair as Juliette Binoche.
Like their brother and sister.
Really, yeah. Odd. Because his hair looked like it was a fake wig. Because you know if you shave your head completely and you're bald.
Yeah.
The hardest thing to do with wigs convincingly is the edges. The actual bit of the hair.
Because you need something to weave it into.
Exactamundo.
Yeah.
I don't know if anyone can confirm this, but please have a look at Bryan Cranston's hair and tell me if you're weirded out by it. A, because it looks weird, and B, and it doesn't really move properly.
They get a very perfect hairline, don't they, when you've got a wig. Like, it's got sort of very thin sort of gauze that they then glue to your head.
Yeah.
And hope that the cameras don't pick up.
Well, there was a big problem that when they first went into HD, all the makeup people were shitting their pants.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they thought, because normally it's just threaded onto gauze and they can't get that tie change.
Yeah. Well, any makeup as well, because rather than covering up blemishes to make people look more perfect, in an HD world, you're just making them look like people who wear makeup.
And of course, much of it is 4K now.
That's right. So now it's become far more the domain of actually beautiful, flawless people.
Well, people's faces look like arseholes.
Well, maybe we just get used to that instead. We just like, oh, I love to watch someone with a face like a slapped arsehole.
Yeah.
Running about the place.
Anywho, so where were we? Bryan Cranston. Yeah. I'm just going to cut you dead.
Yeah, sure. Fine.
Bryan Cranston and Juliette Binoche and their son live in Japan. And there's an earthquake and something bad happens. And Bryan Cranston becomes obsessed with finding out the cause of this earthquake. Basically, it's a film about monsters taking over the world. Godzilla isn't the main monster. There's two other monsters.
Who are?
They're just sort of monsters that...
Mothra.
No, they're not really named. They're... I think, talking of monsters, if you've seen the film Monsters...
Yes, I have.
Which is Gareth Edwards' film that made him sort of a big hit. An indie film. He shot really low budget and did all the special effects himself.
Well, that's... He's one of that generation of... Hollywood suddenly discovers that people have the capability to do big budget special effects at home if they're just very good at it. So Neil Blomkamp doing District 9 was another one of these. But yeah, he made Monsters on very little money, as you say. What did you think of Monsters?
Because I thought it was... And I think it's very interesting parallels between this and Monsters. Because Monsters, it's more the suggestion of the monster.
Mm.
And there isn't, and as far as just a warning for any maybe some spoilers here for Monsters. I think it's on Netflix, or it's, you can get it quite... I think it is on Netflix.
It's on Film 4 relatively recently in the run-up to Godzilla as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's... This guy goes to South America somewhere, doesn't he, to pick up some...
He's a photojournalist. Yeah. And basically the borders get closed because of these monsters, and he's sent by his company to go pick up his boss's daughter, that's what it is, and he needs to bring her home, and everything goes wrong and they have to cross the contaminated zone. It's the only way of getting out of there.
And that was the horror comes from, it's that sort of unseen thing. You do see bits of the monsters, but it's that threat of the unknown, which is very effective. And it's not really when it's called Monsters in your head, you think of a traditional sort of action monster. So
yeah.
It's more of an art house film, would you say?
Well, I get, like District 9, I thought what both those films do very well is, rather than we have live in a normal world, everyone going about their everyday routine lives, and then suddenly you just plonk a big monster in the middle of it and everyone runs around screaming like Cloverfield. What Blomkamp and Edwards have managed to do is make a world where monsters are around all the time and we've gotten sort of used to it, and they create a very sort of realistic world where that's the case. You know, they can, these things are still dangerous, but they just exist amongst us, kind of thing. We coexist, and that's a new sort of monster movie, really.
And that's what felt so original. I mean, the Gareth Edwards is incredible because his rise to fame. There's a film convention called Sci-Fi London.
Yeah.
I think it was 2008, I think he entered it, and he won.
I entered that year as well.
He did a 48-hour film challenge.
Yeah.
And he did loads of special effects in his, and he won that.
I don't believe he did his in 48 hours.
Well, he might have had stuff before.
Well, no, but I've talked about this with a friend of mine, and I don't believe he cheated at all. I'm not saying that. But if he does a lot of CG on his computer, he'll have had many man hours gone into making digital models that he still had on his computer, so they're ready to roll on stuff.
So he won that, then he got funding for Monsters, which is his own film, which he did the special effects in again. And then in Godzilla, so the rise to fame...
That's so fast, isn't it?
He's incredible. Fast. From 2008, and he's... Well, pretty much, he's born in 1975, so that's sort of scary. He's like pretty much a tiny bit older than me.
Yeah, yeah.
It's terrifying, but it's incredible what he's done. But going back to the point I was going to make was, in Monsters, there's a strange feel about that. They feel quite alien and quite... the way he does his special effects monsters, they're quite... sort of hard-edged, weird, ant-like creatures. I can't describe them. They've got a strange aliens feel to them, which aren't the traditional sort of sloppy, scary monster. They're just almost half robotic, half alien in a way, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
And these, and the monsters in Godzilla, sorry for the spoilers, are not Godzilla, but the other two monsters that are wrecking the Earth, are these same sort of robotics. The look of them, I don't know if it really works in an action film.
Okay.
It's like monsters from an art film being put into an action film. I can't really explain it until you see it. They seem too arty to be in this blockbuster film.
Okay. I want to see what you mean now. I mean, finding a new monster is a really hard thing for people to do now, because since it's become a genre, everyone wants to invent the new alien or predator or whatever, and nobody's really done any that has become iconic.
But these don't have the charisma of those. Yeah. They're not the huge monsters.
I really like the ones in Attack the Block. I thought they were new.
Mm.
Did you see that film? Mm-hmm. Where they're proper just sort of furry puppet things with glowing blue teeth. I thought they were great fun. You know, obviously not as genre-defining as predecessors, but I thought they were creative at least. They were really fun.
Yeah, these are different, but these are very similar to the monsters one. And then, so what happens is, it's a usual state of affairs. These monsters start ruining the world, then Godzilla appears. You don't know whether Godzilla is a force of good or evil, and there's lots of battles. And the special effect, you know, these. I'm so used, as regular listeners will know, I hate superhero films and I don't like big action blockbusters.
Mm.
If you like buildings being smashed up and people running and screaming and that sort of business, you'll find it vaguely interesting.
Because it has split critics, this one, hasn't it? I mean, I've heard equally people going on about how great it is as to people saying it's a load of poo.
It's dull. I found it really dull and tedious to the point I was almost falling asleep in it. I mean, the main cast is basically Aaron Taylor-Johnson, who you recognise from Kick-Ass.
Yeah.
He's the son of Bryan Cranston, right, who's going to sort of overcome, an ex-army guy, who's going to help overcome Godzilla or the monsters or whichever one is bad. His wife is played by Elizabeth Olsen, and they've got kids. Use a boring thing. Sally Hawkins, who...
Oh, Sally's in it.
Yes. She plays a professor along with David Strathairn. I can't remember his name. But her role is, it's not even a role. She's a great British. She was in Blue Valentine and Mike Leigh film.
She's in lots of Mike Leigh films, but she was in... God, my brain has dried up. All or Nothing, she's in. She's in
Happy.
Made in Dagenham.
That's it.
She's in Happy Go Lucky.
Well, she's a great actress. She just plays a sort of sidekick scientist in this.
Very good. And she's in my play.
She's totally wasted.
Yeah.
Doesn't say any lines that have any. Just terrible, terrible exhibition lines is all she says.
What is it with blockbusters having too many characters? I mean, they just pack them in rather than flesh out characters they've already need for the plot, you know?
Yeah.
It's a pain in the arse.
I just found it... I'd seen it all before. I think it looked good. It was well shot. The monsters were interesting, but not charismatic enough. And I thought it was overlong, boring, and didn't make me feel anything different that I felt before. Didn't do anything new. I think... It made me feel like I wanted to watch Cloverfield again. I thought Cloverfield was brilliant.
I really liked Cloverfield.
It was different and it was really exciting because you were put right with the people and they filmed on their mobile phones. You know, Cloverfield was basically, it's a similar thing. A monster attacks New York.
And it's a found footage film.
Yeah,
so
they really, really well. And just before everyone had done found footage as well.
But it's exactly what I was describing with the previous monster genre of... Godzilla is probably, you know, the inventor of it, I guess, of a monster in an urban environment. But adding found footage into that, because they now can, with CGI. So, yeah, there's just fleeting glances of this monster. And what Cloverfield did so well is slowly building how much you see of it. And in the beginning, it's nothing. You know, it's glances of movement suddenly in the smoke. And then, you know, a building is destroyed. You're like, what on earth was that? And... it's done really well. There's one shot I hate in Cloverfield, where basically the monster looks directly into camera towards the end. You're like, well, that's all of that. That's all that subtlety and taste gone out the window.
I don't know. I still enjoyed that bit. I thought Cloverfield was genuinely scary, and it actually set up bold to set up the character at the start. It doesn't take much. All you need is 20 minutes of characters doing something for you to start to care about them. and this didn't do this. I mean, I know Godzilla has got sort of that sort of Japanese sort of origins or something, I'm not sure.
I think it's from the post-Hiroshima bomb period. I think it's all tied in with sort of the bomb.
Yeah, so because that's why there was some sort of nod to the Japanese heritage of it at the start by basing it there. But it just feels... I mean, the whole of the shots feel quite grey. It feels like it's graded quite grey.
Yes.
And I'd say that was quite portentous about the film itself being...
Is it fun? I mean, surely a monster film has to be fun.
It's not. The tone is serious. There's no jokes or anything in it. And I think it's got a great cast as well. I really think, you know... Bryan Cranston, Judith Binoche, Aaron Taylor-Johnson, really good actors.
Yeah, they're good people.
But the doctor, sorry, I got it wrong. It was Ken Watanabe.
Oh yeah,
he plays one of the scientists. I thought he was terrible.
Really?
Yeah.
What else has he been in? Because his name's very familiar.
He's in Inception and Batman Begins. You recognize
I know him. Yeah. He's in old man makeup in Inception for part of it, isn't he?
Yeah, so there's a lot of recognisable faces. I think maybe Gareth Edwards might be more of a special effects guy than a big blockbuster guy. I thought Monsters is a far more interesting film. Go and watch it rather than Godzilla's. Godzilla, Monsters and Cloverfield are better horror films that Godzilla sits somewhere in between and is not as good as either.
But is he a good enough storyteller to... be given more opportunities to do different things?
I mean, what he's in is it's not a terrible film. It's just a dull film.
Okay.
You don't go out of it thinking, well, I said it was, I think I tweeted it was shit. But it was just, it's not an awful, terrible film. It's just a disappointment, sort of a damp squib.
I mean, you've got to care about your characters and have a good story to tell in order to care about enormous monsters rampaging around. I mean... I'm trying to think of the last time... Cloverfield's probably the last one that I really enjoyed, and I'd say Jurassic Park is in that genre as well, of just a really good example of the genre.
I don't know whether they had to sort of be too faithful to Godzilla itself. And there's a question whether...
No one cares, though, do they? I mean, Godzilla is an image in people's heads. It's a dinosaur attacking Tokyo. That's all Godzilla is, isn't it?
I think maybe Godzilla is best off rooted in cartoons.
Yeah.
Rather than real life.
And well, it used to be a good guy who breathed fire and attacked other giant monsters.
Well, and this, you don't know if he's a bad guy or a good guy. Well, I mean,
is Godzuki in it?
No, I wonder what
Scrappy Doo kind of cousin.
I hate Godzuki. I want to see Godzuki and Scrappy Doo kill each other in a fight.
Did you see the Scooby Doo movie?
No.
Because, spoilers, everyone, if you want to see...
I've seen bits of it on TV, and it's got that guy, really annoying guy from Scream, playing Shaggy,
who
I can't stand.
Oh, Matthew Lillard.
Yeah, and the Great Dane, which is the CGI Great Dane's terrible.
Yeah, but the baddie in it turns out to be robotic... Spoilers, guys. Robotic Rowan Atkinson, who is being piloted by Scrappy Doo. So Scrappy Doo is the baddie of the piece.
Oh, God.
Yeah. It's weird, isn't it? It's an odd era. Buffy as Daphne and her husband, Freddie Prinze Jr., as Fred.
What happened to Freddie Prinze Jr.?
He
was going to be the big star.
He's probably raising his wife's kids while she continues to work.
I'm going to look him up. So overall, I give it 4.
4 Marics for Godzilla.
Yeah.
Well, I shan't go and see it. I like Bryan Cranston and... Sally Hawkins and Juliette Binoche enough that if it comes on Netflix or something, I might sit through it. But
that's what I recommend.
Yeah,
I think it's you can have it in the background while you're doing your ironing or doing I don't know,
your nails.
If you're maybe you're polishing up your brass things you put under your fireplace, David.
Oh, it's about time I did that.
Yeah,
I need to get my brass polish out.
This is the middle section now, isn't it?
Middle section. Yeah.
Sorry, that review was quite grey and all over the place.
No, you've been inspired by the film itself, haven't you?
Yeah. Do you want to read something?
Yes, I would like to read one of our readers' letters. Who is this from? This is from Matt Ray. You can try doing a Cumbrian accent, but I'm guessing it will come out ever Scouse or Geordie. Cumbrian accent. Where? What? I don't know a Cumbrian.
Cumbrian's on the border of Scotland, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah.
Scouse or Geordie, but they're miles away from each other. I've no idea. I'm just going to have to pick something completely
different.
Do the most
northern you can do without being in Scotland. That is Cumbrian.
That's Newcastle, isn't it?
But Newcastle's on the east. This is on the Cumbria's more on the west sort of thing, isn't it?
Oh, right. Oh, sort of Carlisle sort of.
Yeah, Carlisle's in there, yeah.
I don't know what a Carlisle accent is. My wife and I are planning a trip to New York.
That's it.
And I've noticed that the musical Oh, Hedwig and the Angry Inch, starring Neil Patrick Harris, is showing on Broadway. We are both huge Patrick Harris fans, and having hearing that Hedwig is one of David's favourite films, we have agreed it is a must-see. But we have not seen the film yet. My question is, should we watch the film before seeing the musical, or the other way around? Your advice would be deeply appreciated. Keep watching the films. Matt Ray, Whitehaven, Cumbria.
Absolutely perfect.
Good?
Yeah.
My family's from Carlisle and I've no idea what their accent is.
Have you never spoken to your family?
No, they've moved there. They don't really have the accent. And we don't talk to the locals when we go there. Hedwig and the Angry Inch, very good. It's a one-man / woman play with a band. And the film directed and written and starring John Cameron Mitchell, who wrote the original, is brilliant. For me, with musicals, I think it's always better to know the songs beforehand. I think you always get more out of it.
You can enjoy them more.
Otherwise, because you have to let music wash over you. And if you're trying to focus on the lyrics and what is this one about? Oh, I think I did that, like that one. Then you're just in sort of the wrong mind space. Personally, I would watch the film first and then get more out of the live experience.
Neil Patrick Harris is Doogie Howser.
He is Doogie Howser, but he has had a sort of second wind in America. He's now a sort of god there. He's always presenting their award shows and doing musical numbers and stuff.
I wish I had done one of those.
One of those second winds?
Yeah.
You're due, mate.
Yeah.
He was in Starship Troopers, is what he sort of reappeared in, Neil Patrick Harris. He played the psychic SS officer style character, best friend.
I haven't seen that in ages.
It's a good old film. Yes, go and watch Hedwig if you haven't already. Have we got any more letters?
Yeah, here's one here.
Do you want to read it?
From Tim Wade. He doesn't say where he's from, which is just neglectful, right?
Absolutely.
I'll just read it. Hi MDB. That's quite good, isn't it? Clever. See what you've done there? You've got David, hi MDB.
Hi MDB.
Sounds like IMDB. Merrick David Burt.
Do you think that's intentional?
It must be, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's great.
I'll take it all back to him. That's a really good start to an email. Hi MDB. Just thought I'd let you know about a great film I've seen. Don't know if you've talked about it before, but I can't remember it having come up. Forgive me if you have, though. It's a documentary from 2012 called Stories We Tell, and it's essentially just a story about a family, told through interviews with various family members and directed by the youngest daughter. Won't say too much, but suffice to say I found it really gripping. And would definitely recommend you check it out. Especially as the antidote to a load of the old tosh around in the cinema at the moment. Cheers, guys. Keep up the good work on the podcast. / sleeping and chewing things. I think that's a reference to Buddy, isn't it?
Yeah. I hope.
I did watch Stories We Tell. I think I talked about it about 4 or 5 months ago because someone else recommended it.
Yes.
A documentary, yeah, is what he says in the letter.
Okay.
It's a woman made, basically her mum leaves the family and she makes a documentary trying to find out how everyone, whatever members of the family, felt about it and why she left and why she was different and why the relationship didn't work.
Where can you track this down? Is it?
I bought it off iTunes.
Okay.
It's on there. thought it was going to be well, you see documentaries like The Imposter and other ones which have amazing endings.
Yes.
I think I've been a bit spoiled because I thought it was going to be a really great twist, and there isn't. It just sort of peters out.
Life doesn't give you endings.
Yeah, I thought it was I quite enjoyed it, but I'm sorry, Tim, it's not been my favourite documentary.
The director of Searching for Sugar Man died recently. Did you see that?
Yeah, terrible, isn't it? He's only 35.
Yeah, really tragic, because it was a great film. There's another one for you, people, if you've not seen it. Searching for Sugar Man is excellent. Track that down. Thank you for your letters. Thank you, Tim. If you'd like to get in contact with us, then you can email us, dearfilmfandango@gmail.com, or go on our Facebook page, /filmfandango, or simply tweet us at Film Fandango, or personally at Mr. David Reed, or at Marek Larwood.
Or write it on a bit of paper in your own blood, put it in the bin, and chuck the bin out the window.
And we will be there.
Yes.
Come rain or shine, within 48 hours.
Yes. Preferably in the sunshine, so the blood doesn't get spilt and wet.
Yes. It's really annoying when we finally find a bin with a message for us and it's unreadable.
Yeah, there's nothing more frustrating.
Nothing more. Yes, and we also do this podcast for free. So if you would like to show your gratitude for these free episodes every week, then why not help us keep the podcast going by donating on our website, filmfandango.co.uk. There is a donate button from there. And for everyone who has, thank you very, very, very much. You're the reason there's another episode this week. That's it. Middle section over.
Yes, middle section over. And we're going to talk about, as we're getting to the halfway point of the year, or nearly roughly there, we pick out a couple of films that we'd seen that we found interesting or enjoyed to talk about. But you might, if you don't want to go to cinema, because at the moment cinema is pretty shit.
It's pretty dog shit, isn't it? It's a sort of bobbins fest. I saw a film that, you know what, I've enjoyed it in terms of how much I wanted to think about it afterwards, how much it is a sort of piece of cinema history, but is not in any way a good film.
But I
just found it fascinating. I saw it the other day, and it is The Wiz. I'd wanted to see it for a while. The Wiz is an adaptation of The Wizard of Oz with an all-black cast, with Diana Ross as Dorothy. Michael Jackson
How old is this film?
It was made in 1978.
I've never heard of it.
Michael Jackson is the Scarecrow. Richard Pryor is the Wizard. And the music's by Quincy Jones.
Holy shit, it's got good people in it.
Yeah, really good people. And the Eveline, the evil witch, played by Mabel King, is a phenomenal turn. Absolutely brilliant. But this film is terrible, but fascinating.
Guess what, it's got on IMDb?
5.8?
5.1, which is a pretty bad sign.
It's a pretty bad sign. Now, listen, it's 1978, so we're feeling sort of the 80s aesthetic creep up on us in history, I suppose. And they want to do a Motown version of The Wizard of Oz. Lovely idea. They make it sort of, not gritty, but certainly urban, in that it's set in Manhattan. And sort of the grimier bits of Manhattan as well.
Make me just think it's exactly like Sesame Street.
It's Brooklyn, really. Yeah, it's a bit Sesame Street-y, but darker than that. But two things happen in the development process that sort of doom this project. One of them is that Diana Ross, who is not an actor, hasn't done anything before or since this, really, really wanted to play Dorothy and campaigned to get the part. Now, she was already in her late 30s at this point, and the character of Dorothy is a 13-year-old girl.
There's nothing wrong with that.
And the director really, really didn't want Diana Ross in the role. And she said, well, I can guarantee you that Michael Jackson will do the film if you cast me as Dorothy. and the director left the project over this because the studio wanted Diana Ross as a result because they wanted Michael Jackson. And so they got in to replace the director. Rather than somebody who with experience of musicals, or they got Sidney Lumet, yeah. Who you may know is the director of 12 Angry Men.
Yeah.
Like, that is not a sort of musicals guy, but he was a safe pair of hands who always finished on time and always finished on budget. He did Dog Day Afternoon as well, which, a brilliant film. These are brilliant films.
The Network, really, really good.
Yeah. The direction is so weird, and Diana Ross is so weird in this film. She's playing it like she's constantly on the verge of a mental breakdown. Like, everything around... She's playing it real, as if you did suddenly fall into a magical world where everything around you was sinister and didn't make sense. She's playing it like she's on the verge of tears.
I've never heard of this.
Continually. And the director... everything is so dark, as in, I don't mean thematically, just the lights are really dark. You can't see anything you can, but you know what I mean. It's just like gloomy and like some scenes in Highlander or something, but it's a musical with singing and dancing. And
what? He puts the camera the
high and far away and unmoving, just sort of watching stuff like a technician from the gallery is watching a rehearsal. And there's no joy in the direction at all. It isn't joining in. And as a result, it seems sort of creepy and depressing. And it's so strange. It's really, really odd. Because there are such touches in this film that could make it brilliant. Like, it's got sort of proper sinisterness, like sort of Labyrinth or something does in that way, where things come to life and are really sort of in your face and scary. Like The Crows are particularly good, or there's a bit where the pillars in a subway station break out of from the floor and start chasing them and stuff.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's like, it's this good bits, but it's really interesting. Like, the director did not enjoy what was happening at all.
Have you read anything about what was going on the set or anything like that? Or
only that, you know, he was a safe pair of hands and that's why they got him rather than he was, you know, good at this. But he's a naturalism director. He would just plonk a camera down, leave it running, and get a great performance out of his actors. But you can't do that with a musical. You've got to... The camera has to be showing you how much fun we're all having. It's got to be in amongst it. It can't be distant and far away.
Don't plonk in my musical.
There's an amazing song, which is get on down the road, which is the...
I know that one.
Yeah, that's from this.
Okay.
Quincy Jones wrote all the songs. And it's the equivalent of We're Off to See the Wizard.
Yeah, yeah.
But the entire thing is shot from behind them. You never see their faces as they're walking away from camera. For the entire song, and it's so impersonal and bizarre.
Is the music good though?
Yeah, yeah, by and large. Some of them are sort of forgettable, but the music is good. And as I say, there's what my favourite number from the whole thing is Evelyn's number, the baddie. But again, bizarrely, she doesn't appear until just before Dorothy kills her. Okay. She's got one song, and then she's not that presence throughout the whole film that is, you know, dogging their every move. She's just sort of appears at the end, and it's really flawed.
Are they good performances in it?
Apart from Diana Ross, everyone's excellent.
Michael Jackson?
He is phenomenal in this.
Really?
And it's a real shame that he didn't do more acting, because he's so technically gifted. He could have been like a Charlie Chaplin or something, but he wasn't interested. He was a musician and a dancer.
That's
he didn't
fascinating
want to do
in terms of his control of his movement.
Yeah.
He could have been. I think that's
absolutely
a really interesting comparison. Because Charlie Chaplin, you see him and you're... When we watched Modern Times, we watched last year.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you've got these big... Well, I guess you do get the gift in this film that you get to just blankly see the technique of everyone because the camera doesn't keep moving. And you've got these big ensemble numbers. Like, there's one... Oz itself is the square between the Twin Towers. which is which they filmed the entire thing in. It's just the wizard is in the towers.
And do you think that it was something to do with...
I don't think so. But you've got all of these dancers, you know, giving it their all, trying, you know, these ensemble, and your eye is always drawn to Michael Jackson, like, because he's just better than everybody else.
Poor old Michael.
Yeah, poor old Michael.
So it's worth a watch then. Where'd you watch it on? Is it on Netflix?
It was on Netflix, yeah. So I just, you know, I'd heard about it as this sort of like a Motown version of Wizard of Oz. What an odd idea, but sort of cool. And it could have been genius, is why it's sort of interesting to watch.
Mm.
And just, you know what? Diana Ross reminded me of Elizabeth Berkley in Showgirls. Where you go, you've made a bold choice, but boy, is it the wrong choice.
I don't think she's that bad in Showgirls.
Oh, she's insane. Her character's mental.
I think it's fascinating. I think it's watchable.
Well, that's it. That's it. But Diana Ross sort of is, but in a far more... It's not as enjoyable because she is playing it so dark when it's supposed to be a musical. She's playing it dark, the director's playing it dark, and the others aren't doing enough, can't do enough to bring it out of that hole that the two of them are putting it in.
Oh, The Wiz.
The Wiz. I just have to see The Muppet Wizard of Oz now, and then I'll be happy.
Super. Shall I talk about one I've really enjoyed?
Yeah, go on. What have you seen?
This was recommended to me by friend of the show, Paul Allen. He's one of my friends. He's a real life friend. Who I used to bully on the bus on the way to school because he was friends with my... But he was a younger brother, my best friend.
So it's Stockholm Syndrome. He's still sort of fond of you.
He is in love with me.
Yeah, yeah.
It's After Hours. Martin Scorsese's After Hours.
Right. Sounds like a dinner mint.
It does sound a bit like a dinner mint. I haven't been a huge Scorsese fan, which is...
I haven't for many years. I like his early stuff.
Like, what did you like?
Scorsese... Goodfellas, I like.
Yes. Well, no, Shutter Island. Yeah, Goodfellas is great. Shutter Island's great.
I don't like Shutter Island. I think it's rubbish.
No. The Wolf of Wall Street, I didn't particularly like.
Didn't go to see it. I wasn't interested.
And Hugo, I thought was just a really Hugo, weird...
I didn't like either. I thought it was lame. Gangs of New York is terrible.
Yeah.
The Departed is really mediocre. It's like a made-for-TV movie with an A-list cast.
Yeah.
It's Frank Lampard's favourite film of all time.
What is?
The Departed.
Really? Yeah. Well, I hope you're listening, Frank Lampard. So what he'll do when he retires, he'll be listening to Film Fandango non-stop.
Probably.
He made After Hours just after The King of Comedy. So it was Raging Bull, The King of Comedy, of and After Hours. I think this is one of my favourite... This is an amazing film.
He was good back then, wasn't he?
But... Griffin, the main star of this film is Griffin Dunne, and you will all recognise him as from one of the greatest films of all time, An American Werewolf in London.
Yes.
He is the main guy's friend who something bad happens to at the start.
Yes.
But enough people have seen it, so it's not really a spoiler.
He's in the scene in the cinema as well.
Yes. So,
the famous scene.
And,
hello, buddy.
And he's really, really likeable. I remember watching American Werewolf in London thinking, why is he not more well known? Because his performance in that is great. In this, he plays... It's a very simple story. Apparently, this script was written by some sort of... A college student wrote this script and handed it in. It's quite a circular... It's a really neat, tight story. If a guy, he leaves work one day, he hates his job, he meets this girl in a cafe and gets a telephone call and decides to go round to her house, and he's just trying to get back home and everything is going wrong, and it's like a series of set pieces of him meeting these weird characters that exist at night time and slowly him...
So it's an odyssey, it's a returning home odyssey.
Yeah, and Griffin Dunne plays the lead. He is brilliant. I think he's a really likeable... Why was he not given more lead roles? And I can't understand.
Have you done
it.
Some research? Is there a
I don't
reason?
Know. I just
it's usually drugs if somebody's career halts like that, isn't it?
Maybe I've just not seen the film. Maybe he's made bad choices.
Mm.
But it's very surreal. and odd, and the script is hilarious. I laughed out loud, and I never knew what's going to happen. And because all the characters in it are in a bit insane, it's got Patricia Arquette in it. When the point where you think, oh, Patricia Arquette is really good.
I used to really like her.
Because you think sometimes she's done some terrible films.
Yeah.
And this, sorry, not Patricia Arquette, Rosanna Arquette. Yes.
Patricia Arquette's True Romance.
Yes.
And Rosanna Arquette's everything else.
Yeah. You forget how good people, why they became really famous.
Yeah.
When you see them in so many terrible films. She's brilliant in this. She's a kooky girl that Griffin Dunne takes a fancy to, and she's quite odd. There's brilliant cameos by Terry Garr, who's a famous, you recognise, she's a famous sort of soap. What's she in that she was really
Terry
famous
Garr.
For? She's in Close Encounters and The Girl in Tootsie.
Okay.
I think she was in some sort of soap that she became famous. I'm sure she was.
So what year was After Hours?
1985.
Okay.
I'm showing you a picture of Terry Garr.
Oh, yes.
Now, you recognise her. She's been in lots of big films. She plays like a waitress in a cafe, this sort of kooky waitress. All the dialogue is odd and things go wrong. And it's not very much similar to the... I watched The Double, which is the recent film.
Richard Ayoade.
Yeah, where the lead, everything, he's got a double and everything starts to go wrong.
Yes.
After Hours has that similar frustration and claustrophobia and madness to it, but much wittier script, better performances, and feels original at every moment. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I can't recommend this film highly enough. I think it's one of Scorsese's best films, and I don't understand why it's not doesn't receive more plaudits. If you like sort of odd sense, if you like the American Werewolf in London, and you like that sort of quirky sense of humour, it just feels modern, and it doesn't feel like it's 30 years old, which it is now. Please go and watch this. This is my hidden gem, which is, a lot of people know. It's just me doesn't know it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's no, one I recommend.
It's not ever mentioned in articles about Scorsese or anything.
No,
they always talk about Raging Bulls and Goodfellas.
Later. I think this should be up there. It's completely different, and it feels really fresh and original. Please write in and say if you disagree, and it is well known. But I was really surprised. After Hours, go and watch it.
Cool. All right, track that down. Well, that's it for this week. We'll be back next week with yet more films.
Keep watching.
Oh, you look like you were going to say something.
I was going to say keep watching the film, but it's going to sound weird after you say yet more films, and I say keep watching the films.
Repetitive, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Repetitive. Well, we can't say the word films for two sentences, and then we can say it.
Okay, so, that sounds like a good idea.
Keep watching the films. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.